Today's episode of Peanuts Gallery is brought to you by Hennessy's Hardware. Do you hate girls and dogs, but love tools? Come to Hennessy's Hardware for all of your meat lump hardware needs.
Once I have written a theme song, it will go here.
This is Peanuts Gallery. I'm Josh Kagan.
And I'm Molly Lewis.
And today we are talking about Charlie Brown's All-Stars, available on iTunes, YouTube, Amazon, Torrent, I'm sure. Probably shouldn't say that, but...
It's probably on YouTube.
Yes. It is, but for money.
Oh.
I didn't look super hard, though.
Twist, okay.
And then, of course, on the Charlie Brown 1960s collection DVD, which I highly recommend, because it's very nice. Watch it, because unlike our first episode on the first special, Charlie Brown Christmas, which everyone has seen a million jillion times, if you have not seen Charlie Brown All-Stars, much of this will not make sense to you, probably.
Yeah, I hadn't actually seen it before we sat down to record this thing.
Had you never ever?
Never ever.
They stopped showing it in the mid-80s, it sounds like, and only recently in like the late 20-aughts started showing it as a companion piece to Easter Beagle Charlie Brown to round out the hour as opposed to one of those garbagey post-Schultz. It's some other things that happen, Charlie Brown type specials
sure.
that you and I will be covering 50 years from now when we get there.
In season 25.
As someone who'd never seen the special before, and I don't think I have either, certainly don't have a lot of memory of it. As someone who'd never seen it before, what did you think?
I thought it was not the best. I guess the thing we sort of talked about with... The Christmas special was that there wasn't really a through line, and it kind of had these little sort of incidental moments, but it just seemed like it was half an hour of people just throwing shade on Charlie Brown, and ultimately with good reason.
As a note, and we'll get into the synopsis and stuff in a second, as a note I wrote down, every scene in this could end with everybody kicking Charlie Brown in the sack.
It's
just,
true.
Just a straight up, like, something happens, and then just a lineup of nut shots.
And they just drive him out of town. With torches and pitchforks.
I liked it. I also had not seen it in a very long time, if ever.
I understand why it's not a classic, but it's not bad. It's just
definitely not bad.
It's just less good.
It is closer to the spirit of the strip at the time than Charlie Brown Christmas. Charlie Brown Christmas has this very sort of sedate, lackadaisical, sort of tromping along through 22 minutes and a tiny Christmas miracle. This is closer to like reading 2 weeks worth of the strip with a kind of gentle arc through it. It's not based around a holiday, which I think is another reason why it doesn't get shown a lot.
Sure. You wouldn't watch this to celebrate like the start of baseball season.
Sure.
Per se.
But it is relentlessly mean-spirited to Charlie Brown.
Mm-hmm.
I think Charlie Brown has strengths and weaknesses in this episode.
Sure.
And he does not necessarily play to his strengths, but we'll get into that. This is the synopsis I jotted down for the episode.
Okay.
Synopsis. A children's baseball team isn't very good and everyone quits. A local businessman offers to sponsor the team regardless, as long as half of the team is fired. The team's manager doesn't take the sponsorship. They lose another game. The team makes a bad shirt for him. And he stands in the rain. Also, a dog surfs. Synopsis.
It sounds almost David Lynchian in that sort of...
Oh, yes. And it's all in black and white. Nobody talks.
Just narration in French.
It kicks off really well. I made the note, the pre-credit sequence has more animation in it than all of Charlie Brown Christmas.
There were all these interior shots that they only used once.
Yeah.
For that.
There were...
Boom, 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 insides of houses.
It starts off, Charlie Brown pitches, invariably the ball gets hit to the International Space Station, and then Charlie Brown hustles his shit. And it's actually kind of great to watch. It's kind of great to see him as like, oh, he's a man of action. He's running up the bleachers, down the bleachers, across the street. It's kind of like the climax of Ferris Bueller's Day
Off.
It is. But he's like breaking into people's houses, a house that only seems to be made of a set of stairs going up, a top floor, and then a set of stairs going down.
Yep.
and just and great, awesome, jazzy music playing underneath.
Some kind of rumba, really.
Yeah. And it's like, and this is, it is, as opposed to Charlie Brown Christmas, which opens with just like, here's some kids skating. Here's a dog giving children a head injury. Here's the opening credits. This is just like, bam, Charlie Brown is going to fuck shit up. And then he catches the ball and it jumps out of his glove.
Yeah. But he gets to the ball in time. I feel we must point out
he does all of it.
Hustles successfully.
Yeah. While nobody else on the team is doing anything.
No.
Ever. But they are there, of course, then when he catches the ball and drops it, to stand there and call him an asshole. Mm-hmm. Or as it is said in the Peanuts parlance, blockhead.
Yeah.
But I, in my brain, I now just change that to asshole.
Did you notice the Fred Flintstone, like, footstep sound effect that they leaned on more than once? I appreciated that.
That was their one action noise.
Yeah.
For all, an interesting sound to make, of rubber shoes on dirt. You, that real sort
that bongo
of,
noise.
That bongo noise played up for effect. And so then we are, so he drops the ball. Everybody calls him a jerk. And that's basically how every scene in this ends.
Yeah.
With everybody just like, well, you done f***ed up again, Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
You're terrible.
Well, something we talked about the first episode was sort of whether or not Charlie, this is actually an ensemble piece, or if it's just everyone's a foil to Charlie Brown being a failure. And this special to me seemed to really lean on the, no, it's everybody versus Charlie Brown, because most of the time when the ensemble was talking, it was in unison, you're an asshole, Charlie Brown. You lost the game and you're basically Hitler, you know, like, but in unison.
Yeah. There's a lot more talking in unison in general.
Very ambitious voice direction.
Which I'm trying to think if that ever happens in real life, if everybody just spontaneously starts talking.
And for extended paragraphs of time.
Yeah.
It's a fly ball. Charlie Brown. You're gonna catch the fly ball.
It's impossible.
No. It's unsustainable.
It's literally impossible to do. They're very well Well, they have time to get in sync with each other, I suppose, because certainly none of these kids are doing any playing of baseball.
No.
They're
just kind of rehearsing for Charlie Brown's future failures and
yeah, and that's and when Charlie Brown's not around, all they talk about is how terrible Charlie Brown is. And I feel like they everybody needs to do other things.
There's no conversations, it's just this corral, this madrigal of hatred.
So we get into the first scene where Charlie Brown basically walks out of his house, Linus is standing there.
They cast him as kind of the generic pinhead.
Yeah. Linus went from being sort of a helpful man of the cloth in the first episode to just an absolute fucking drip. Like, a little like
I've crunched the numbers about the team, Charlie Brown, and it seems we've had 99% failure.
Don't tell me the odds. He's turned into 3PO from Empire.
Yes.
Who's just standing around and saying things, not being helpful, not a terrible friend.
I've itemized specifically why you're a failure, Charlie Brown.
Yes. So he rattles off all of these statistics and they lost 999 games.
You're working.
Yeah, which is like, I feel like some attention should be paid to the fact that they, like,
that's like this, 3 games a day.
Yeah, they're really hustling. I mean, no wonder they're losing. They're not eating.
There's no off season.
But what's fantastic about this is that Charlie Brown basically walks out of his house. Linus is standing there with a ream of statistics, basically saying, our team is terrible, our team is terrible, our team is terrible. And Lucy is like, and it's all because of you. Nobody really wants to take any responsibility for their own behavior. And it just seems like they all believe that Charlie Brown is just this magical talisman, this monkey's paw from the Brady Bunch. And if somehow he were to just get zizzed off into space, that they would suddenly become the greatest baseball team of all time.
And I was wondering, as I was watching, what notes they got from the network between the first special and this one, because it seemed like there was a lot more sort of physical bits. A lot more people serving face to Charlie Brown, a lot more Snoopy, and a lot more children yelling in unison.
Yeah, it almost makes you wonder if the Christmas special, like, they slowed their roll a little.
Yeah.
Or maybe they just didn't have the money
maybe to
do all of that. But as a result, the first one is sort of meditative, and it really is it's almost about Charlie Brown against himself, mm-hmm. because he's like, I don't like Christmas and it's all very commercial and I'm sad. And
well, everyone in the first one is kind of like, ah, stop being a bummer, Charlie Brown. But in this one, they're forcibly like, you're a bummer.
Yeah.
You're the worst.
You're terrible.
Why do you even try?
I hate you. And then Charlie Brown goes to bed, even though it seems to be the middle of the goddamn yeah. day.
That's what depression is, though.
Yeah. He just climbs into bed with an entire...
Just going, well, everyone hates me. No one will give me a chance. And yeah. then Snoopy's leering at him from his footboard.
Right. Nobody will let me forget my mistakes. And then it pans out and Snoopy, still wearing his baseball cap, is just staring daggers at him.
Yeah.
Nobody.
They got real excited about the sort of expressive panning shots in this one. Did you yes. notice? Yeah.
Yes, it actually, well, that's, and again, that's kind of one of the reasons why I like it. And I think it's because, again, it's like super fresh to me because I've never seen it before, but stuff's happening. People are moving. You look incredulous.
Yeah, no, it seems much more storyboarded than strip-like, you know, yeah. a lot of.
And we, while we were watching it, Charlie Brown getting ready for bed at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever yeah. time it is, in this weird.
Well, this day holds nothing more for me.
Yeah. Although it is dark out. So I guess Charlie Brown just stood rock still for 5 hours until the sun
lives
went
in the Arctic Circle.
Well, no, again, it's the industrial accident.
Yeah.
The parents are meat. Although the meat lump, there are a couple of times in this that the meat lump theory, for those of you who have not, listen to our first episode in the 5 months that it's been out. we have this theory that there was some sort of horrific, Lovecraftian accident that has turned all of the adults into these just lumps of meat, who have no mouths, hence wah, 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 and the children are just allowed to run roughshod over the town.
Pretty much.
But this was a house at the beginning. He runs in a house with stairs. Maybe all of this stuff could have been built before. The event.
But there's more than one mention of various adults in this special, because they mentioned Lucy's mom twice.
Yep.
And then there's this sort of mysterious small business owner.
Mr. Hennessy. I have a fact about that. Isn't that exciting?
That is exciting.
And we'll get to how Mr. Hennessy comes into this in a minute. But yes, Mr. Hennessy is the adult in question in this episode, named after Jim Hennessy, who was in charge of licensing for United Features Syndicate.
Basically
made Charles Schulz a bazillionaire by putting Snoopy on goddamn everything. And so including him in this episode was like their tribute to this guy. And you're making a confused face, and so did I when I read that. But we'll get to that in a moment. So Charlie Brown goes to bed at 2 o'clock in the afternoon with his dog staring daggers at him. He wakes up the next morning. It is the first day of the season, and everybody's standing around waiting for Charlie Brown to show up, talking about how terrible he is. And, oh God, I hope he doesn't show up. He smells of failure. He's terrible. And then Charlie Brown shows up and he's like, hey, what's up, jerks? And everybody then screams in unison, we're doomed! You smell of death!
You're an ill omen!
Charlie Brown?
You portend bad things.
But then... And this is, and I mentioned this before, then we see Charlie Brown do a little actual honest to God managing.
Yeah.
And from my place of not knowing which end of the bat you're supposed to hold, it seems like for this brief shining moment, he's actually a pretty good manager. And then we see that his other job on the team, which is he is also a pitcher.
Yeah. I was wondering why is he the only pitcher?
Well, it's interesting. In my million zillion years ago podcast, Like I'm an Idiot, I did an episode with my buddy Zach about baseball. And he did teach me one thing about baseball that I did not know before. It was his opinion, of course. The pitcher is literally the most important member of the team. Like, teams live and die by their pitching. And it goes to this theory that I have that Charlie Brown is either put in or puts himself in places of authority.
Yeah.
So not only is he the team's manager, but he is also the team's pitcher. And he's very bad at it.
I would argue that he is also a belly itcher.
Go on. He's super terrible at it.
It just seems like they set him up for failure time and again. Like,
and he sets himself up for failure. Because at no point does everybody's just always like, you're terrible, Charlie Brown, you're an awful manager, you stink of death, and you're a millstone around
and
all of our necks.
He's trying to like encourage participation and be like, oh, see, we need to do more of this, and we need to work as a team, and we need to, and at some point he could say, okay, well, Lucy, if you're so smart, why don't you pitch? You know, like he could be a little more, but he wants to be at the front. He wants to be,
and this comes up at the end, he wants to not just win the game, he wants to be the hero.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is like a central failure point of Charlie Brown's persona. If he's, and this sounds like terrible advice.
No, but
I am a broken old man. It seems like if he set his goals slightly lower, that maybe he would have a shot at success.
And we talked about this with the Christmas special too, is like, maybe you shouldn't start by directing the Christmas play. Lucy just wants to be the Christmas queen.
Right.
And that's slightly more achievable.
So they play the whole game. Everyone's terrible. And when people do well, it seems to be by accident.
Right.
One of my favorite lines, I think it's in this scene. It's, Lucy and Frida are hanging out. And Lucy just says, hey, Frida, how's everything in right field? Which is just, I think that might be how I start conversations from now on.
Yeah.
And the two of them just start shooting the shit about nothing. Lucy describes a dress that just sounds awful.
Yeah.
It's like it's a pink dress with a sugar bow, and it's just.
Dresses are very important to Lucy in the TV universe.
She's a girl, apparently, and it's just all.
That's all girls talk about.
That's all they talk about. What do girls talk about in this universe?
Money.
Money, dresses, and how much they hate Charlie Brown. And that's all you need.
Yeah.
She catches the ball, but it's by accident. A couple people do well, but it's by accident. Generally, everyone on this team is terrible, but it seems like whenever there is a climactic play that needs to be made, it is Charlie Brown doing it, and he fucks it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody yells at him. A pop fly gets hit. Everybody yells, catch it, Charlie Brown. You catch it. You run it. Go.
They had so much time, too.
Yeah.
Any of them could have ran for it. Linus, put out your blanket.
And you showing off in Charlie Brown Christmas with how versatile your blanket is with throwing and catching things. In this episode, nothing.
No.
It just trips him up. I think Charlie Brown has maybe a spring in the center of his glove. Just something that it's like the Acme trick glove.
He's just got a fist inside of his, he doesn't quite understand how baseball gloves work. He thinks it's a boxing glove.
Because it always lands perfectly in the glove, and then like a minute goes by, and then
yoink,
poink.
Yeah.
it just spits it out. So they but this time they've had enough. It's the first game of the season. It's their 1,000th loss, and everybody's just like, we are out of here. We're done.
I wrote down a quote here where Charlie Brown says, where did everybody go? And Linus says, they all went off to cry.
They take this very personally.
Yeah.
Because it goes back to, they seem to be working under the notion that if only Charlie Brown wasn't there, they would be the goddamn New York Yankee. They'd be the greatest team in the history of Little League. Mm-hmm. Everyone quits like one after the other. They're just like, you're terrible. You're stupid. And then Molly and I both got very excited because, this is another episode, before, Shermie was just assimilated by the Borg or whatever ended up happening to Shermie.
Yeah.
We delighted in Shermie's one line in Charlie Brown Christmas when they're like, hey, Shermie, you're going to be Shepherd. And now maybe I'm exaggerating a little. It's like, hey, fuck you. Bada bing. I'm not going to be a Shepherd. You be a Shepherd. Oh. But he's got like this kind of – he's got kind of like this tough guy voice a little.
He does.
In Charlie Brown Christmas. And so when it was like Shermie's turn to quit, I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. I wanted to open his mouth and I just want to – what am I, fucking clown to you? Instead, it's like Shermie seems to have suffered like a crippling loss of nerve.
Were lobotomies still a thing?
Possibly.
In this era? Maybe he got lobotomized.
Yeah, maybe he ate a lot of lead paint or something, which I believe was all the rage back then.
Yeah.
Shermie comes up to him and I was really excited for him to be just like, hey, you bag of donuts. Nope. Instead, he's like, Hey, Charlie Brown.
I guess I'm going to quit too.
I'm not going to be on the team anymore.
I'm going to go.
Because we lose a lot. And
I'm just tired of being on the losing team.
I want to win sometimes.
I can't show this much disappointment.
And also, I think, and this is actually a thing he says, I think you get kind of a neurotic joy out of losing all the time.
That is, I wrote that line down too.
And then he walks off, never to say another word, probably again. Those may very well have been the last words he spoke.
I'm just going to walk straight off of this cliff now. Bye.
Like it is in a bunch of specials, and certainly in this episode, where everybody else's voice direction is just on point.
Yeah,
Shermie's is just like the most mealy mouth.
It seemed like there was some overlap between the voice talent on the Christmas special and on this, but Shermie did not make the cut.
No, Shermie did not make the cut. Peter Robbins did.
Yeah,
Peter Robbins, voice of Charlie Brown. He did the first three specials. And
Linus, I think, too, sounded like the same. Yeah.
But I did learn that even though he only did these three specials, this Peter fellow, his Og has been used in perpetuity throughout all of the specials.
That's just great.
Nobody nailed it like him. So Shermie mealy mouths his way out of there. Everybody quits. And Charlie Brown's just like, oh, I guess this is the end. Cut to commercial.
Right.
First big act break, ending on a real high note. All of the team, including Snoopy, they stack their baseball caps by Charlie Brown. And they're just like,
and we're burn out. Them in effigy.
We're going to have, and Lucy says, we're going to have a summer doing normal things, which we see in the next act, which includes splashing in a wading pool and uncomfortably skateboarding.
But first they come back. Is it after they come back from commercial when they visit this mysterious Mr. Hennessy's shop?
Yes. We go an entire act with nothing happening, and then we come back and we scream into the plot where Charlie Brown is just sitting destitute on the street.
Just on a stoop.
Just leaning
of a hardware
against,
store.
Just leaning against, again, an abandoned place of business, Hennessy's Hardware. And he's like, you know what? Maybe it would just be better for everybody if I resign from the team. And immediately Snoopy shows up with a pen and a piece of paper because Snoopy's a jerk.
Yep. And he starts writing out his resignation letter, and it seems almost like suicide letter E.
So Charlie Brown is writing his resignation / suicide note, and then Linus bursts out with news that makes almost zero sense. He's like, Charlie Brown, great news. Mr. Hennessy wants to sponsor the team.
And Charlie Brown's like, yeah, sure, that sounds great. And Linus is like, you better forget it, Charlie Brown. We're a terrible team.
Like, immediately.
Yeah. You
like,
brought it up. You brought it up, Linus.
He comes out and he's like, first of all, I think, obviously, Mr. Hennessy is in some, like, I have to imagine this is for money laundering purposes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure why you would want to sponsor a team that has lost maybe he's doing it ironically.
I don't know. Maybe he owes Charlie Brown's dad a favor or something.
Charlie Brown's dad has been giving him free haircuts.
Yeah.
It's like, you got to make this good.
I should have been charging you for these beard trims, you know. Oh no. What can I do?
But of course, they're saying it in Meat Lump, which probably sounds like a tease. But for whatever reason, Mr. Hennessy wants to support this team and wants to get them uniforms.
I wasn't clear, like, with Linus walking out of the shop, if it was something that Linus had set up. Like, hey, Mr. Hennessy, I'm on this team. It's not doing so well. Really? You'd do that? Charlie Brown, guess what? Or if it was Mr. Hennessy's idea and what does he want? Like, I wrote, like, who is this Mr. Hennessy person and what does he want with these children? Like, several times in my notes.
Yeah, I guess that would make sense if Linus is inside the building and Charlie Brown's just sitting out there.
It seems like Linus would be more at ease talking to the Meat Lump adults than the rest of these children.
Sure.
Like, it seems like he would just shoot the shit, like, oh, Mr. Hennessy, I'm doing fine. Well, the baseball team's not doing so well. Really?
Maybe he speaks lump.
Maybe he does.
Maybe with the blanket, he puts the blanket over his face.
He puts his thumb in his mouth and it's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
But he immediately comes out and he's like, amazing news. He wants to sponsor the team. And Charlie Brown, like, that sounds great. And then it's a close-up shot of Linus and Snoopy just basically having a conversation in the void. The Charlie Brown specials are big fans of sending their characters into the void for a split. Just like, you know what? I'm tired of drawing things today. Just put a pink backdrop between two characters.
I only want to draw this background once.
Because Xerox machines had not been invented yet. And then Linus is like, oh, you know what? Nobody's going to want to do this. And Snoopy's like, yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah.
No. And then they walk away and Charlie Brown's like, but uniforms, which seems to be the most, that then becomes the engine of everything else in the episode.
Yeah.
They don't really care about being on a league. The kids don't really care about having sponsorship. Everyone's very excited to have uniforms.
Yeah.
And I think it's because since all of the adults became meat lumps, they've only had these one pair of clothes.
Nobody's imported any clothes into this town.
Nobody's imported any clothes into this town. They all wear the same thing day in and day out. Of course.
A lot of costume changes in this special too, because in the following scene, when we've just, you know, pulled the uniform rug out from under Charlie Brown, I guess, there's this sort of waiting pool party thing that they set up where Linus is inflating an inflatable waiting pool. And they're wearing bathing suits, which I was not comfortable with. That's a part of the canon that I did not want expanded on.
After an entire first act where nothing happens, and then the big plot point being introduced, the episode then comes to a screeching halt.
Yeah.
Sally, in her bathing suit, her bikini, can uncomfortably flirt with Linus, who is just not having it.
No.
In a way that he's not even like, usually.
He won't even humor her. Yeah.
No, there are not even jokes. Like, don't I look great in my bikini?
No.
Don't I look like a beach bunny?
No.
Why do you know the phrase beach bunny?
Yeah. I was not comfortable with, like, just even, like, the allusion to any kind of sexuality in this universe. Like, I didn't. Everything about that made me uncomfortable.
Sure. Just even the use of the word bunny, because at this point, certainly Playboy had been around for a while.
Yeah.
So that had to have been where the, you know.
But that Sally had any awareness of what a beach bunny is and that might potentially be appealing to a boy was just like not something that, because the sort of crux of the Peanuts universe is that they are locked in childhood forever. And that's why Christmas is so disappointing. And that's why the baseball season is so important. And I just did not like the acknowledgement of, like, look, I'm in a bathing suit. Isn't that interesting? Like, didn't like that at all.
And Linus has your back.
Yeah.
He wants nothing to do with any of that mess.
Yeah, he will not.
And he's just like, go away. And she's like, he's adorable. He never says what he's thinking.
And that was sort of the first shade, because I really like Sally in the Christmas special, because she's just like, oh, he's cute. He's got a good sense of humor and, like, kind of carries his blanket. But this is, like, the first sort of glimmer of, like, her deterioration as an accessory character. You know.
Her slide into madness.
Yeah. Get me my lawyer. I've been humiliated. That's Sally. You
yes,
know.
Yes, exactly. So, and that scene's 45 minutes. And then Linus inflates the thing, inflates the pool, fills it with water.
Whimsical, you know, surfing sequence with Snoopy.
Even though it's the second special, Snoopy in Charlie Brown Christmas. Well, of course, there are two. I think sort of groups of thought about Snoopy. Mm-hmm. One likes his wacky escapades and the other prefers him as more of a background character.
Yeah.
And in the first episode in Charlie Brown Christmas, he is definitely a background character. He's doing undog-like things. He's,
right.
You know, he's putting up decorations and but
he's a B plot though.
But he is a B plot, a beagle plot, if you will.
Hey.
But in this, we get our very first animated Snoopy flight of fancy,
mm-hmm.
which I think no special didn't have from this point on.
Right.
And so we, you know, Snoopy goes into his house, grabs his surfboard, jumps into the wading pool, and immediately we are into, like a 58 minute surfing sequence. Where absolutely nothing happens. And it reminds me of like the very early days of animation where the whole thrust of it was, isn't it amazing that these things are moving?
Yeah.
Like that's it. And it's just like, hey, it's Snoopy on a surfboard. Pretty great, right?
That with like all the backgrounds in that first scene where Charlie Brown's running through all the houses and this felt like, oh, we have money left over.
Yeah.
What do we do?
yes. And apparently they ran out of that money afterwards, because the surfing sequence was used thrice in Charlie Brown over the ensuing 3 years. It was used in Snoopy Come Home.
Okay.
It was used in Snoopy's Reunion, which I've never seen, and in the animated version of, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
That's where I've seen it before.
Yeah.
And they also recycled the lights and display contest theme from the Christmas special like two or three times in just this special. And I'm sure this is not the last we'll hear of it.
No, and that's actually, and I don't know what they called it for the first special, but for this, they, that piece of music was called like Surf Snoopy.
Ooh.
The one that played over the surfing sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a thing we did. I will say this, the music uniformly great.
Yeah.
In this
It's
in this
all
episode.
Garaldi for this.
It is one. All Garaldi. It's all Garaldi for a while, I feel like. But we did not, for some reason, neither of us are particularly into music. We did not point that out in the first episode. His music is really peppy and has, Molly was pointing out, had elements of kind of a rumba in it.
In this one, yeah.
Yeah.
And I do feel like we neglected to mention it in the first episode, but it's kind of one of the things that saves some of the more bleak sequences in the Christmas special. Like, it's very important to the formation of this sort of TV canon.
But what's really interesting about it is that in no point, and the episode is called Charlie Brown All-Stars, and it's all about baseball and sports, it's still just sort of like awesome jazz music. Like, there's nothing like, there's no sportsiness about it.
Yeah.
It's delightful and it keeps the thing moving. So there is a surf sequence. And then the directors of the episode were like, you know, let's not go slamming back into the plot. We better show. And then we see, you know, we make good on Lucy's promise. Like, oh, we're going to do other things besides be on your shitty losing baseball team, Charlie Brown. So
we can't play three baseball games a day.
Yeah. There 999 games in the season. So there is a skateboarding segment where all of the boys skateboard.
Which I would describe as groovy, would you say?
I would describe that as groovy. That's where the sort of Roomba music came in.
Mm-hmm.
They jump over some things and it's great. And they get tangled up with girls who are playing jump rope.
Double Dutch, yeah.
And Charlie Brown then chases after them and is like, hey, no, seriously, listen, you guys, it's going to be great because uniforms. And everybody's like, please continue f***ing off.
Right.
It's been minutes since we've told
you.
He's
a real killjoy. Yeah.
Yeah. And then everybody somehow magically grows skateboards and skates.
They form like a skateboard gang around him.
They turn into a skate. Well, that's what happens. All the adults got turned into meat lumps.
And now skateboard gangs rule the town.
Yes, exactly. And they all tell Charlie Brown yet again that his shit stinks. And then they all skate off. But it's like, the note they must have gotten was they skate away huffily. And like, in kind of like a, all making a kind of like a star belly sneech
harumph
face. Yeah, they harumph. They skate harumph off.
They harumphily skate away.
Yeah. And Charlie Brown again is just like, but cut uniforms, you guys. Finally, new clothes.
I put a note in that kind of applies generally to the special, but I really noticed it right here. But if this were your introduction to the Peanuts canon, would you side with Charlie Brown at all with like no previous affection for him? Because he's a real killjoy and he's a failure, like a proven failure, and he's kind of self-sabotages and he's just bugging all of his friends who are trying to enjoy their summer. And I just don't know if I didn't already like Charlie Brown and kind of feel for him, if I would just be like, oh, fuck off, Charlie Brown. Just let them do their thing, you know?
Well, he's got very exciting information to share. He's got, he's trying to
redeem himself.
This is the promise of new clothes.
Sure.
You know, and I mentioned this in the first episode, like when I was a kid, I 100% related to Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
And because I certainly was not good at sports. I wasn't good at much of anything. And I got picked on by kids a lot. And so I would see Charlie Brown and I would just be like, oh, we're cut from the same cloth.
Right.
Because in our hearts, we know we're good people with something to offer, but the whole world is kind of telling us to, go f*** ourselves. And now when I watch it, I feel both embarrassed for myself as a child and for Charlie Brown. Like because I think it's half that Charlie Brown brings it upon himself and half that the kids that he hangs out with give no quarter.
Yeah. There's also the pain of like when I look back on myself and the part of me that identified with Charlie Brown as a kid, I grew out of that eventually. I got to become an adult and I got to move away from my, you know, crappy childhood friends and my crappy childhood town. But Charlie Brown is never going to get that solace.
No.
And that's sort of the most uncomfortable thing about him, is he's going to be stuck in this failure state just forever.
Forever and ever. All of them stuck in this endless, hellish childhood.
Right.
Where there is no... It's like prison.
It they is. Like live They're in some kind of, like, body terrible horror. Pre-adolescent purgatory.
Yeah.
Where... They don't even get, there's sort of an opportunity, like as you sort of go through puberty, you recognize, oh, I'm in the chrysalis and I'm going to be a butterfly one day.
Right.
And they are never going to get there.
Right. But for the time being, Charlie Brown is trapped in this hellish child purgatory trying to, but, and I guess that's why he's always, he wants, it's ironic because he's the star of every special, but he in his head wants to be the star of his own special.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know that he is, which goes back to this like weird thing. It's like, I don't, it's not that I just want to succeed. I have to be the greatest.
Yeah. I need to, well, I think it's, he's looking to redeem himself. He's looking to like, I'm going to win this game. I'm going to steal home base and everybody's going to, they're going to see that I'm not a useless sack of shit, you know?
Yeah.
Oh.
But
he is.
He is kind of a, he's a semi-useless sack of shit.
Yeah.
He's a good motivator.
He's a well-meaning sack of shit.
Yes. Aren't we all? So after a two-hour sequence of a dog surfing and children skateboarding and Charlie Brown being reminded that he is garbage, Charlie Brown is just sitting around his house thinking about how great it's going to be when everybody gets uniforms, mm-hmm. even though at this point he does not have a team to speak of.
Right.
The phone rings. And we slam into our next plot point. Bazap! Boom! Ziz!
I was waiting for your mic to peak, and it didn't, so I've done my job.
Ah! The phone rings. It's Mr. Hennessy basically saying, hey, kid, I've got the uniforms. Come pick them up. Oh, one thing.
And we find out through Charlie Brown repeating everything that's been said to him out loud, which is the natural thing you do in a phone call. Just, oh, I see. No, we do have a dog on the team. Yeah, and we do have girls on the team. Oh, it's the league. Oh, okay, I understand.
Well, yeah, Mr. Hennessy basically says, you have to fire basically your entire team before...
More than half of the team, right?
Yeah.
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 And it seems like Mr. Hennessy could have checked up on this before he ordered 10 uniforms.
Well, I'm sure he just thought, like, oh, we'll just throw some other kids in there.
Yeah. And I guess they're all the same size.
Yeah, exactly. They're never going to grow.
Yeah.
But this was the funny thing to me. It was like, hey, Jim Hennessy, thank you very much, United Feature Syndicate, making me a bazillionaire by putting Snoopy on so many different kinds of drinking glasses and hats. You are going to play the part of the patriarchy.
Right.
You are going to be the guy who says, Charlie Brown, in order to make it, you've got to fire more than half of your team, mm-hmm. including Snoopy, who is kind of a capable player.
Mm-hmm.
At which point, based in nothing except some weird misplaced sense of loyalty that is not deserved at all by his friends, he's like, well, I'm afraid I can't do that. They're all my friends and my loyal dog. And, you know, we got to keep the team together. So I guess we can't do this.
And this was confusing to me because... in the Christmas special, the whole crux of the Christmas special is that he's raging against this kind of faceless machine for seemingly no reason other than to rage against the machine. And this is a seemingly random institutional constraint that Charlie Brown just accepts. He doesn't go, like, it seems like the Charlie Brown from a year prior would be like, well, this is patriarchal or something.
Commercial.
This is commercial.
Yeah.
I will not. But there, he just kind of went, well, okay, that's just how it is. Click. Like, just hung it up.
Yeah, and you expect there to be some kind of, and again, this is what I like about the Peanuts universe, is that it very rarely, if at all, wraps up, quote unquote, happily.
Right.
There is no change of heart on Mr. Hennessy's part. There is no sort of like, oh, you know what? Your loyalty to your friends should be rewarded.
Yeah.
Tell you what.
I've already bought these uniforms. Yeah. At least take the uniforms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does he do with the uniforms now?
He just burns them on the pile of hats from the previous scene, I guess. just a bunch of scarecrows on the edge of town with baseball uniforms. Nice and crisp.
To keep itinerant lumps away.
I guess, yeah. Just as a warning.
Scare lumps.
To other baseball teams.
So Charlie Brown, in a very noble move, and almost, I would say, really stupidly noble, because these people hate him.
Right.
Like, he even says, like, they're all my friends and my dog. And, like, his dog stares daggers at him every night, just as a beacon of failure.
Yeah.
His friends are just like, oh, hey, what's up, Charlie Brown? We were just talking about how much we hate you. But now that you're here, we hate you.
Yeah. Because he walked up and they went, oh, it's going to be a failure. Like,
yeah.
To his face. Yeah. In unison.
Yes. They have not they have not learned about talking behind someone's back.
They have done nothing to earn his trust. Like, you're right in front of him. Linus says to Snoopy, like, hey, I think this is going to suck. I think Charlie Brown can eat
his
a bag of balls.
His best friend.
I know.
His closest
friend. His two best friends.
And his dog are both like, Jesus, this is not going to work. And Charlie Brown's just like, well, I gotta keep my, and there's part of me that wanted to get sort of Frank Cross from Scrooged and just be like, scrape him off, Charlie Brown. Scrape him off.
Yep.
Get, kick him out. Whatever. It's the 60s. Nobody's going to give you shit about this for years. but no, he nobly and with a good heart is like, well, I guess we can't have these uniforms. And then Linus walks into his house because there are no locks in Peanut Town.
There don't need to be.
It's all open.
It's all children.
It's all children. And nobody.
There's no police force who would do anything.
Children can't reach the locks and the adults don't have opposable thumbs. So it's just a city of open doors. Linus wanders in. And Charlie Brown then, very annoyingly to you, I might add, Molly, recants the entire phone conversation.
Hi, Linus. Mr. Hennessy called and said that we have the uniforms and I was supposed to go get them, but we can't have girls or dogs on the team. And so I said no, and then I hung up the phone, and then you walked in.
Which brings us to right now. And there's a split second where Linus is about to say, he's like, well, Charlie Brown, and one would think that he'd be like, oh, well, that was super cool that
well,
you did
one
that.
Corinthian says that, no.
Yeah, no, anything. Anything to be like, oh, well, Charlie Brown, that's like super noble that you raged against the patriarchy, or hey, that's great that you stuck up for our friends. Let's go tell them what a good dude you are, or like, hey, let's find another way. None of that happens. Instead,
yeah.
Charlie Brown's like, hey, this is the entire phone conversation I had, dot, 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 no uniforms. And Linus's response is, Lucy's going to tear you limb from limb. She is going to fuck you up, Charlie Brown.
Lucy's
going to
stomp you into a powder.
She is going to curb you.
But then Charlie Brown's like, you know what? No, it's going to be fine. We're going to win this next game. And then I'm going to tell them that there's no uniforms, but they're not going to care because we were going to have won a game. And he walks out the door and Linus goes, good old Charlie Brown. He never gives up. I'm like, well, that's a sea change of it.
Well, there is one more exchange between Linus and Charlie Brown there, because Charlie Brown is like, we don't have uniforms. Oh, well, my sister will kill you. Like, your days are numbered, Charlie Brown. And then Charlie Brown, as you said, comes up with this whole plan, but basically like, well, I know what I'll do. I'll lie. I just will not tell them about this turn of events. And again, you think that Linus would say something like,
the truth shall set you free.
The truth, you've turned this team into a den of thieves or some start knocking shit over. But instead, he's like, oh, you should just leave town. Like, Linus is
such a naysayer.
Yeah, as wonderful and helpful as he is in Charlie Brown Christmas, in this, he's just like, yeah, I feel like I'm looking at a dead man, Charlie Brown. You should just dig a hole and get in it and just wait for death's sweet embrace. And then Charlie Brown's like, fuck it, I'm doing it anyways. And he walks out. And then Linus is like, good old Charlie Brown.
He's a go-getter.
He's noble for no reason and he's a fucking liar. Cut to commercial. And then we get to the next game, and of course everybody's like, "Hey, Charlie Brown, you're terrible." Mm-hmm. And if you thank God we have uniforms, it's a very driving thing for everybody.
Yeah.
Frida says naturally curly hair 27 times, and for the second time, Frida and Pigpen are sort of set up as foils against each other.
Yeah.
Of course, they were the innkeeper and the innkeeper's wife in Charlie Brown Christmas, because it's a classic odd couple setup, and he is filthy dirty, and it's always just like, what are you, you're getting dirt all over me.
Yeah.
And he's like, my name's Pigpen. So there's some rigmarole before the game. And then we get into this game, which Charlie Brown, his only, I guess even more so than before, it's like, if we win this, then if I tell them we don't have uniforms, they'll still be so amazed that we won. that they won't care about the uniforms.
It seems like them winning the game would solve more than just that problem for Charlie Brown.
And all that needs to happen is they need to win a game after losing 1,000 games in a row.
Yeah.
But now everybody's sort of full of pepper, and they're really excited about becoming a real team. And I made the note at the beginning of the episode, Charlie Brown is not that bad of a manager. He actually seems like he knows what he's doing. And then we get to the big game and you realize, oh, he's a terrible manager.
Right.
Because he has one piece of advice for literally everybody, no matter what.
Yeah. Just grit your teeth.
And bear down.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it kind of sound like he's like a Civil War surgeon. Just like, all right, well, Linus, I'm afraid this gangrenous foot is going to have to come off.
Just bite this belt.
Just grit your teeth and bear down. And he gives that same piece of advice to everybody, but somehow it's magic and they start getting hits.
Yep.
And even the dog gets a hit. The dog gets a hit and then steals all of the bases and essentially gets a home run.
Yeah.
Off what seems like would only be a single and against a team that we do not see.
Yeah.
Why do we not? Does this play into the conspiracy theory? Are they playing against nothing? Is there a chance?
Well, like, it's sort of like, was anybody going to see the Christmas play? Is there anybody else in this universe? Because they never really mention even other towns. Where is this other team coming from?
Yeah. And if it's not...
Well, because the other thing, too, is in the first game, Charlie Brown, I think, tries to hit a ball and whiffs it. No, he pitches weird and whiffs it. And Lucy's like, watch it. You almost hit my mom. Like, and so people's parents are coming out to these 1,000 failure games. There's an audience at all of these.
Maybe that's why you can play 3 games. Because once you go through all of the work to put your meat lump parent into the bleachers or whatever.
Yeah.
Or whatever their containers are.
You just kind of wait until your non-Newtonian parents kind of filter down through the bleachers. Though Charlie Brown ran over a pair of empty bleachers in the first shot. So I'm not sure if there's anybody there.
But where are the other why don't we see the other children?
It seems odd to me that the first time that they would go, oh, we're not allowed to have a dog on the team, is when they are approached by, you know, the possibility of league play. Like, it seems like one of these 900 other teams, or maybe it's the same team every time, who knows?
Like the way it's the Globetrotters and the Generals.
Yeah. Like, it seems like sometime earlier someone would have gone, wait, you have a beagle on running your bases? I don't know if that's allowed.
Well, the first time in the strip that we see them actually play against other humans, it's Peppermint Patty and her team.
Yeah, and she hasn't been introduced yet.
She has not been introduced yet. And of course, and she thinks canonically that Snoopy is a kid with a big nose. So some people don't even know what dogs are.
Maybe that's a different kind of mutation in a different town. Just we're in Meat Lump Town and there's some other town where the dogs walk upright like men.
This is a note that I just made. What kind of, I mean, keeping in mind that they're meat lumps, what kind of nightmares must Lucy and Linus's parents be?
Yeah.
To raise 2 awful children. Like Lucy, angry to the point of violence constantly. Linus, a simpering drip.
Right.
What is their home life like?
Well, I would imagine Lucy and Linus's mom is a lot like Lucy, you know, and there's sort of a...
But a lump.
But a lump, yeah. Because her only mention of her mom, apart from the, hey, Charlie Brown, you almost hit my mom with a baseball, you asshole, was her talking to Frida about like, oh, my mom got me this hideous sounding dress.
And of course, we know that she bicycles.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And plays pool. There is a extended arc in the strip, I think in the 70s or possibly the 80s, where this takes place in the non-canonical universe where the parents are human beings,
right,
and not Pizza the Hut. Lucy's mom gets a pool table with a tangerine felt, and so all of the moms stop doing everything and just go play pool.
Oh,
at Lucy's house.
I like this.
Yeah.
I like this a lot.
That never became a special, but all the parents went away, Charlie.
I think we can selectively choose from the strip canon to service. I want to see a bunch of meat lumps play pool so bad. I didn't know how bad I wanted that.
Dear Deviant Art.
Right.
Is that them spitting the ball out? Yeah. The game's going great. Snoopy steals all the bases, setting up a and immediately is thrown up on people's shoulders. And it's like, he's a hero. He won the game. There's like 4 hours of game left, but for all intents and purposes, he's the closest thing to a hero we'll ever have. And I think this is where Charlie Brown gets the idea that
I can be the hero.
That I too can be the hero. All I have to do is steal all of the bases.
That's a pretty consistent thing we've seen so far, is Charlie Brown being like, I'm going to save the day. And then Snoopy secretly and mistakenly saves the day.
Right. So he goes up. He gets a hit. He's delighted.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one of his rare expressions of pure unbridled joy.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely 100% related to that, because if you grow up kind of thinking that you are a failure and a schlub, when something goes right, even accidentally, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, thank God. Thank God I got 1 minute.
It's not just me. Yeah.
1 minute reprieve from this hellish
yeah.
meat lump studded existence. And it immediately becomes a jerk about it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, immediately he's like, I hit it, I hit it. Did you see that? You can't say I never hit it. It's like,
ooh,
you have to stop talking.
Slow your roll.
Yeah, slow your roll, Charlie Brown. Like, you're now starting fights with people who aren't there. Possibly, literally, we don't know if this other team exists.
Right.
They may be.
It's just a pitchback machine.
Or it's the scarecrows. It's the scare lumps.
Who have beautiful new uniforms.
Charlie Brown, why are the scare lumps we're playing across?
Mr. Hennessy's sponsoring the scarecrow team. Charlie Brown, why? We had that in the bag.
So Charlie Brown taunts the scare lump team with their beautiful new uniforms, gets to first base, steals second, steals third. We throw to the other kids, who are all like,
in unison,
we better not do this.
Don't steal from me, Charlie Brown.
Yeah. When they're like, he wouldn't do that, right? Nope, of course not. He wouldn't be that stupid.
Smash cut two.
Doodly doodly doop. Oh, look, I'm going to steal third for home. I'm going to do it. It's going to be great.
I'm going to be the hero.
And he has this like weird, again, monologue to no one, like, I'm standing on the base. I'm not standing on the base. I'm down the base. Hang on. I'm going to do it. I'm not going to do it. Day turns to night. Snoopy goes surfing again. Many things happen and he's still there. And then finally he's just like, fuck it, I'm going to do it. And it's one of those things where you're just like, this isn't going to work out.
No, you did this to yourself.
You did this to yourself, Charlie Brown. He slides into home, but apparently starts sliding the second he starts running.
Right. Just belly flops onto home.
Doesn't even make it.
Nope.
Doesn't even make. No, he's just like, here I go. Step, slide. I'm lying in the dirt. And home base is like one town over.
Yep.
And the game has been lost. And everybody stands around him and is like,
in unison. Ah, oh, Charlie Brown, you fucked it up.
You're terrible, Charlie. You did it again. Thank God we're getting uniforms. Like, oh, right. We gotta put a nice little bow on this ticking clock. And Charlie Brown's just like, We're not going to get uniforms, no. You guys. It's not happening.
And they're like, go shit up a rope, and they leave.
Well, what's funny to me is that all of the kids kind of throw their heads back to just howl at the heavens, like, you ass! And Linus does this as well, even though Linus has all of the same information that Charlie Brown in the audience does. And at any point, Charlie Brown could say, I didn't get the uniforms because they wanted to fire the entire team. Everybody's like, go fuck yourself, Charlie Brown. Linus does not say, you know, anything. And then Charlie Brown, like, everybody walks away. Linus hangs back. Charlie Brown's like, hey, so this wasn't too terrible, right? And Linus is just like, no, you're an awful human being. You're disgusting. You disgust me, Charlie Brown. And then everybody walks off and talks about how terrible Charlie Brown is. And then Linus then decides that is the perfect opportunity to announce why they are not getting the uniforms.
Right.
And blah, 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 because the patriarchy, et cetera, et cetera.
Charlie Brown took a principled stand against sexism or whatever.
Yes. And you would think this would be enough to make everybody feel bad.
Right.
But then fucking Schroeder.
Yeah.
Who has been... He hasn't even played piano in this episode.
No.
He has contributed nothing. He yells at Charlie. This is Schroeder's arc in the episode. He yells at Charlie Brown for distracting him from his Beethoven lessons.
Right.
At one point, Charlie Brown is up at bat and somebody's like, would that be something if, could you imagine if Charlie Brown hit the ball? And Schroeder's like, I'm not ready for the world to end. This is all he contributes
to.
And he skateboards haughtily.
Yes, he does. He's in the skateboard gang.
So,
but yeah, he immediately turns tail, and it's uncomfortable because it's a thing that you see dudes on the internet do all the time. Like, yes, ladies, this guy is right. You are totally, you've been assholes. You've been ungrateful, and Charlie Brown's been loyal to you. And he's saying all this like he didn't just hear it for the first time.
As if he just like walked in from another part of town or something like that, or is just like hearing all of this information for the first time, or hasn't ever met this Charlie Brown fellow before.
Right.
But in fact, he's just been shitting on Charlie Brown the entire time, mm-hmm. but now feels like, oh my God, this is it. This is my opportunity. This is my chance to make women feel bad about themselves. Mm-hmm. Phew. And so he leans into them as well, where Linus basically got the job done.
Yeah.
Linus conveyed all of the information. Everybody already felt bad.
Yeah.
And then Schroeder's just there like, yeah, but did you also know your jerks? Skateboard haughtily. Shh. And he goes play piano. And then everybody's like, oh, well. And nobody relents the idea that Charlie Brown is terrible.
Right.
Like, they're still like, well, he did lose us the game. But in retrospect, I guess maybe we're also terrible.
Right.
Or something.
Because Linus brings in the, hey, you guys have all been terrible. And Schroeder goes, yeah, ladies, you've been terrible.
Yeah. I am not part of this.
Let me deflect this.
Yeah.
Onto the women's.
Quickly. Because unlike Charlie Brown Christmas, where it really was the ladies doing the lion's share of insulting, right. And the guys would sort of half-assedly be like, yeah, Charlie Brown, that's a stupid tree. After the girls had been like, we have opened now up the floor to calling Charlie Brown an asshole. Yeah. And the guys are like, I guess you're an asshole.
Yeah, they're right. You're an asshole.
Yeah. But in this, it's just like everybody's shitting on Charlie Brown. But the second that there's an opportunity for Schroeder to be like, oh, I don't know. The sheer nerve. How dare you, ladies. And then Schroeder does nothing for the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
Schroeder just disappears. In a poof of self-righteous vape smoke.
But then they decide like, okay, so we're going to make this right by Charlie Brown. And they say, we should get him a uniform. We don't have any material. And Lucy goes, I know. And they take Linus's blanket. They go into the void. They go back into the void. It's just this kind of yellow void.
And by the way, Linus gives it up. A, Linus gives it up really quickly, but B, Linus introduces the information, we don't have material. And then before Lucy can say jack shit, he looks at his own blanket and goes like, oh, I know exactly where this is going.
Why did I say anything?
Why do I?
You brought this on yourself, Linus.
Yes. And quite frankly, good. I'm glad Linus is suffering a little.
It seemed like a Pyrrhic victory.
He's been a sanctimonious doof the entire time. So they take his blanket.
And they make it into a sport coat.
They make it, yes, a sweatshirt. Yeah. Using, insult to injury, using Linus as the model.
Yeah.
As like the Project Runway, a sweatshirt for Charlie Brown. And apparently, the Peanuts gang's magic hands only work at Christmas time. Because they use a very similar, it's Linus standing up on a chair and all the girls like waving their hands furiously around him, and Snoopy is like sewing something, using the machine. And as we learned from Charlie Brown Christmas, when they do this, generally something goes from terrible to amazing. Mm-hmm. This is not the case.
No.
They find Charlie Brown, who is still lying, staring up at the heavens.
Just kind of muttering to himself like this litany of failure.
And the girls come up to him like, hey, Charlie Brown, first of all, top line, you're terrible. because no scene can begin or end without us reminding you that you're the worst. But in spite of that, we made you a uniform. And they give it to him, and it is ill-fitting, and it says our manager on it. And it is not – it's not a – I think Charlie Brown is like more of a summer or a fall, but like these cool kind of blue winter colors, they don't do anything for him.
No.
And it is a terrible nightmare shirt, possibly because maybe they only have up until this point made clothes for Meat Lumps.
One can assume that the Meat Lumps are wearing clothes, yeah.
Or some version.
Some just I think it's just tarps. It's a tarp situation.
And that's what they make for Charlie Brown. They make essentially a tarp with a head hole and sleeves.
Yeah.
Which I guess is what a shirt is, but it is ill-fitting. He is moved to tears.
Yeah, single tear.
Very nice. And they're like, "Isn't this great, Charlie Brown?" And then I don't know if this is just on the DVD. I don't know if what happens next is that Charlie Brown starts talking about like chemtrails and the Zionist conspiracy, but a very weird thing happens on the DVD where Charlie Brown starts talking. He's like, "It's going to be great. We're going to next year.
Next season's going to be."
Yeah. And then it just immediately fades to black as he's talking.
Yeah.
My theory is that maybe they go right into like an animated Coke commercial or something. Oh, I did a little more research. Wild Dolly Madison did sponsor Charlie Brown specials after a certain point. Mm-hmm. The first two were actually Coca-Cola sponsored.
Okay.
So maybe what they did, maybe what it was like Charlie Brown started talking and then Lucy and Linus were like, "Hey, Charlie Brown, that's great, but shut up because let's have a refreshing Coca-Cola."
Yeah.
And also Chesterfield cigarettes.
I couldn't hear you over the bubbly refreshment of this Coca-Cola.
We throw back to the tag of the episode. It is pouring rain out. Linus and Lucy are staring at the rain because that's all there is to do.
Linus seems fine without his blanket. He seems to hold up pretty well.
Oh, yeah. He does.
Yeah.
He on the Kubler-Ross scale, he's probably... Somewhere
between bargaining and acceptance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's close. They're just staring at the rain because, of course, Meat Lumps can't make TV specials happen or TV or television. And there's just nothing to do.
There's no power.
There's no There's literally nothing to do but stare at the rain. And again, everything in these specials seems to go on for a minimum of 45 minutes. So when it's just like two kids talking about the rain, like they are going to sit there and they are going to talk about the rain. And, you know, like, "Oh, it's really coming down out there. I'm glad I'm inside." Me too. And then Lucy says, "You'd have to be a real blockhead to stand out in the rain." And then doodly doodly doop.
Smash cut.
Cut to Charlie Brown standing on his pitcher's mound, wearing his R manager shirt, pouring rain, waiting for a game to start.
Like that outrage that nobody showed up in the pouring rain. Like nothing is good enough for you.
No. Take the day off, Charlie Brown. Stay inside. Stare at the rain.
Lower your expectations a little bit.
Admire your new piece of clothing. You, the only person with a new piece of clothing in this town besides the scare lumps. And everybody's bathing suits.
Right.
Linus comes out there and is like, "Hey, maybe you should come inside." And Charlie Brown's like, "Absolutely not." And then Linus starts shaking.
Yeah.
And we see that he's fallen back on the Kubler-Ross model. But, and then Charlie Brown's like, "Why are you staring at me like that?" And you're like, "Cause my blanket is your stupid sweatshirt, you churl." I'm paraphrasing. and then in a moment reminiscent of Rosa Sharn at the end of, Grapes of Wrath, Charlie Brown offers Linus a corner of his shirt so Linus can sit there in the rain and suck his thumb. And they just both stand there and get rained on.
It's so dismal. It's such a dismal ending. Comedy.
That's our special. And that's it. And no games are won and nobody has a change of heart. And even this time they like decided to make him a shirt and the shirt is ugly and kind of everybody still hates Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
The end?
The end?
Yeah. So, using the metric that the first Charlie Brown special, Charlie Brown Christmas, is the sort of the yardstick that we measure all other specials against. Mm-hmm. Where do you put this in comparison to Charlie Brown Christmas?
It seems like they followed a lot of the same beats in that Charlie Brown was put in charge of something that he was clearly not qualified to lead. with no particular time pressure and no specific audience and no particular deadlines. And in the end, he disappointed everybody, but they came together to show him that it wasn't, he didn't fuck up quite so bad.
Right. You did not enjoy this as much as Charlie Brown Christmas.
No, and I mean, I go out of my way to watch the Charlie Brown Christmas special every year, and I think that's the only one that anybody I know revisits on purpose.
Sure.
You know, with the exception of, like, maybe the Great Pumpkin and maybe the Easter Beagle.
The holiday ones.
The holiday ones. And they're kind of their holidays for which there's not a lot of other, like, well, it's Easter. What do? I guess I watch the Easter Beagle. It's not that a lot of the specials are bad. Some of them are really bad. But most of them are just less good than the Christmas special. And certainly, I think this is less good. But
I think it is less good as well, although I think I enjoyed it more than you did. Because it definitely reminded me more of the strip than the Christmas special does, mm-hmm. Or did rather. I think it's funny. I think it's animated well.
There was almost a Waking Life, like, difference in animation style from scene to scene. But I really liked the way that the second baseball game was done. I thought all those little expressions were really cute.
They did not figure out at this juncture how to give any blinking or expression to a background character. So there would be these eerie shots where, like, Lucy would be talking and hyper expressive and Shermie would be standing in the background like somebody just shot a dart into his neck. Just like eyes wide open, stock still, and just like,
this is the only thing happening in this town. I must pay attention.
So I liked it fine. I found it enjoyable. I thought it moved along. Mm-hmm. I thought it had something resembling a through line and a beginning, middle, and end. Like, there was a plot. There was a problem that was set up. There was a resolution. Like, dramaturgically, it works to me a little better than Charlie Brown Christmas, which really is just a bunch of things that happen.
I feel like it was more sort of visually rich than the Christmas special. And I like the sort of visual style of the Christmas special a lot, but it takes its time with its shots. And there was just kind of more going on.
It zips.
Yeah.
It zips along in a way that I think Charlie Brown stuff doesn't get credit for. Mm-hmm. Because I think when people, and I said this in the first episode, when people think of Charlie Brown specials, they think of Charlie Brown Christmas solely, mm-hmm. which has kind of its own internal rhythm, as opposed to this, which is just like more boom, 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 gag, gag, gag.
Yeah.
I'm fooling around with some questions to ask at the end of the episode. Obviously, mm-hmm. there's what we learned, and we'll get to that. But again, using the first special as sort of like, if we decide that the Christmas special is sort of the one ring to rule them all.
Right.
So here are some questions based on the archetype set up in the Charlie Brown Christmas for this one. Mm-hmm. Did Charlie Brown bring all of this on himself?
I feel like he did. And I feel like there's a lot, sort of little hints you get about the rest of the season leading up to this, where you kind of go like, this is maybe not your strong suit. Maybe we should have hung this up a while ago. Maybe not 1,000 failures in. But that's kind of, I mean, I guess that's kind of the positioning of this universe, is Charlie Brown is 1,000 failures deep. Yep. And this is just another in a long line of failures. And we just happen to know that the last 1,000 failures were baseball specific. I'm not sure about, like, I feel like the Mr. Hennessy thing kind of got pulled out from under him. And I mean, I'm not really sure what Charlie Brown was supposed to have done there, other than firing more than half of his team.
Or coming clean immediately and just being like, hey, gang, you know, like, he could have shown some real leadership qualities and been like, look, let's show
that's
them.
True. Yeah.
Let's show them what a goddamn good team we are.
Bad news, gang. Oh, we can't have uniforms because we have girls and dogs, but girls and dogs are important to me.
Yeah.
So that's the choice I made.
Instead, he decided to lie.
Yeah. And for all we know, like, Lucy would have been like, oh, yeah, we knew that. I know that girls aren't allowed on the league team. That's fine.
Right.
You know, or I hang it up.
Let's show them. I'll kick them. Where's all this bot? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to. Yeah. Send Lucy to bust some kneecaps.
So I think because of that, I think Charlie Brown shows some glimmers of competence in this episode. You get the sense that his managing style is okay, although he leans way too much on bear down and
Grit your teeth
and bear down, which it's like he read that like on the back of a baseball card or something.
Yeah.
But at some point, Charlie Brown needs to look in the mirror hard and just be like, maybe I should either be the pitcher or the manager.
I do feel that Charlie Brown fails to see the big picture most of the time. Like maybe 1,000 failures in, we should maybe try a different team sport.
Yeah.
You know, what if we took up rugby?
I feel like Lucy would really come into her own there.
I think so too. And Patty, Peppermint Patty, if she ever shows up.
She
shows up sometime in the 70s. I don't think we see her for a while.
So it sounds like we're both kind of on the same page here that Charlie Brown...
Could have averted most of this.
He could have avoided a lot of these problems.
Yeah.
Certainly when he decided to steal like every base in Christendom because he saw his dog do it, not realizing that his dog is magic.
Right.
Is Lucy the main source of agitation? Lucy is the closest thing to an antagonist we have in the Christmas episode.
No, that was the thing that kind of struck me, is that everybody seems to be like drift compatible in their hate. You know? Because
speaking in unison.
Yeah.
They all...
It's a fly ball. Charlie Brown's going to catch it. Slide, Charlie Brown. Like, why wasn't the special called Slide, Charlie Brown, Slide? Because they said that 3 or 4 times.
That's the name of the book. There's a book that collects all of these strips. I remember it from my childhood.
Right.
That collects all of the baseball strips. And if I'm not mistaken, it's called Slide, Charlie Brown,
That would
Slide.
Make sense.
And I think I read on Wikipedia that this was originally called Good Grief, Charlie Brown.
Oh, that's too general. Yeah.
It could literally be about anything. I wonder if the accident caused all of the children in town to be able to link up with each other's thoughts.
That seems like a stretch.
And Charlie Brown.
But adults that are meatloaves, not a stretch at all. Totally plausible.
Thank you for bringing me back down to earth, Molly. Phew. Wow. I was really flipping out. No, they all speak at the same time and they're all haughty at the same time and they all hate Charlie Brown at the same time.
I think they go to secret Let's All Hate Charlie Brown classes.
The new school.
Yeah. Taught by Lucy, because she's the only other authority figure in this town.
But she is not, she doesn't seem to be as much of a ringleader.
She's not a thought leader, no.
No. She's super angry constantly, and she's super angry at Charlie Brown constantly, but she's not.
But again, I think we're seeing the tail end of this arc, and it could be that when they lost game 200, she was like, you know, who's the weak link in this chain? Charlie Brown. He's a fucking moron.
Right.
You know, she could have.
So, Lucy, why haven't you quit the team? What, and quit show business? Like, there's no reason for any of these people to be on this team. Did Linus offer sage advice? Did Linus save the day with Corinthians?
Well, maybe he should have left. Maybe Charlie Brown should have left town. You know, maybe Linus was onto something.
Because you're a drifter, Charlie Brown. Yeah. You're eating out of a tin can, Charlie Brown. Linus, as we've stated, is useless in this episode. 100% terrible friend, awful.
Yeah. I have a couple questions myself. Do you think this would be a good entry point for someone into the Peanuts universe?
I do.
Why is that?
I actually do. Because I think this is an even clearer delineation of the day-to-day of the strip, which is Charlie Brown is trying to get a thing done. Also, baseball is a huge part of this universe. I certainly couldn't pull up the percentages, but a lot of Peanuts over the decades was devoted to this team. So certainly it's a really good way to sort of get your finger on that particular pulse.
Yeah.
I think everybody is, for the most part, on model. Like,
I feel like Schroeder, well, there's not really a lot of indoor sequences.
No, but
Schroeder's a jerk, whether or not
Beethoven,
he plays piano.
And he acts like a jerk.
Yeah.
And as you and I learned from the Christmas special, Schroeder's just kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
Frida says naturally curly hair. Pigpen is dirty. Snoopy has a flight of fancy adventure, so we know that he's not just an average dog.
Linus is kind of an egghead.
Yep. Yeah, it's all there.
Yeah.
It's all there in a way that I don't think it is. And also because it's not built around a holiday.
Right.
We're really now just seeing like this is, you know, we've set up all of the characters in this sort of unique scenario. And now we're showing this. This is like what their day to day is now.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I feel like the people that are not Charlie Brown are a little less distinct. Because it's kind of. I mean, I guess that's kind of the point, is Charlie Brown is the pinball that keeps bouncing off of everybody else. Right. And there's a lot, there's like a sequence where he's about to pitch and people keep walking up to him on the mound and going basically in their way, don't fuck it up.
Right.
We're here for you. It's all riding on you. And I'm sort of attached to Linus. He's kind of one of my favorites. And there's...
He let me down in this one, though.
Yeah. Because
I like Linus, too.
And, well, there's, like, a sequence, you know, where at the beginning where he's like, I crunched the numbers and it turns out we thuck. You know, like... But then later they send him out to scout the other team and he scouts his own team. Like, Linus is either an idiot or he's the brains, but he can't be both.
Right.
You know, and I thought that that was kind of patchy.
He is younger than everybody else, though.
Yeah, I guess. But, like, does he have bad vision? How did he mess up, like, his own sister?
He does have bad vision.
Does he?
He gets... It's either him or Rerun, but I think it's him. I think Linus gets glasses at one point.
I thought that was Rerun.
Maybe it was Rerun.
Their head is shaped the same.
Right.
They kind of throw a bunch of stuff at Rerun because he's sort of a garbage character.
Right. And at that point, like, Linus was
They need someone who's like
in
more...
In the military or something. Yeah. Like, who knows?
They needed someone who was even more credulous than Linus. And so they wrote in Rerun.
So you would... So between this and... I feel like certainly back to back... If you showed these to people who had no idea of the universe, people would be like, okay, I get this.
They're different kinds of introductions, too, because more people have seen the Christmas special. And so it's like I know someone who hadn't seen Star Wars but saw it just so that she could have currency in you know all the references people were throwing around. And so they're sort of valuable for different reasons. But if you wanted to introduce someone to the strip, I feel like this would be a better sort of introduction to the broader canon of what the Peanuts universe is like. And the Christmas special kind of sits as its own thing.
Yeah.
You know?
So it's kind of the Empire Strikes Back of the, well, I guess not.
This one, no, it's certainly not one of the prequels, but it's.
Don't feel like you have to use Star Wars.
No. I feel like it's a really good universe adjacent, like Star Wars novel, you know?
Sure. This is Charlie Brown Expanded Universe.
Yes, it is.
Perfect.
Good. I feel better about that.
Well, I think we did it.
All right. What have we learned?
Grit your teeth and bear down.
I'm Molly Lewis.
I'm Josh Kagan.
This has been the Peanuts Gallery.
Thank you for listening to the Peanuts Gallery. This was only our second episode, but if you'd like to go back and listen to our first episode, or listen to any episodes we post in the future, go to peanutsgallery.simplecast.fm. We're going to try to get one of these up at least once a month, hopefully every 3 weeks. You can follow us on Twitter at @peanutspodcast, which is probably the best way to keep apprised of when new episodes go up until we get our posting schedule real solid. Right now, our Twitter feed is mostly Bill Melendez's mustache, but it is a pretty sweet mustache. If you have any questions, comments, or well actualies that you'd like us to address on the show, put them in our mailbag at ask.fm/peanutsgallery. And if you have any fan art depicting meat lumps, we don't want to see it really. In our next episode, we'll be discussing It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, which is available on iTunes, Amazon, and wherever fine network television cartoon specials are sold. Here's a sneak preview of what that's going to sound like.
I think it's a code that the meat lumps want Charlie Brown to rise up against his oppressors, because essentially what they've given him is a pillowcase full of rocks.
Oh.
So this is like their way of saying, you're the chosen one, Charlie Brown. there is an imbalance.
There was a prophecy that a ghost full of holes would come to our door and free us from this flesh prison. You are that chosen one. Questions, comments, concerns? Tweet them at us at @peanutspodcast.
You blockheads.